Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is August 26, 1977, and this is my audio letter number 25. It is now almost 3 months since I recorded audio letter number 24 on May 28, 1977. And as I warned you then, the plans for dictatorship and war are now being speeded up. At that time, about 3 months ago, the Soviet program of planting nuclear weapons in the inland lakes and rivers of the United States had turned into an all-out, silent attack on our country. Soviet agents in vans, campers, and trucks were fanning out unhampered throughout our land, turning our peaceful countryside into an unsuspected battlefield strewn with nuclear mines capable of destroying our water resources. And at no level of government, local, state, or federal, was anything being done to stop it. Local and state authorities, when alerted to Soviet activities in their areas of jurisdiction, were shrugging it off in absolute disbelief. They were saying, in effect, "Relax, just trust the federal government to take care of everything." With this attitude as an excuse, they were and still are shirking their sworn duty to at least investigate conclusively some very specific leads they have been given. But as for the federal government, actions such as the waiving of the Jones Act by Treasury Secretary Blumenthal to allow Soviet vessels to ply our inland waterways speak for themselves. And just as in the case of the Fort Knox gold scandal 3 years ago, there's no effort whatever now to disprove my charges about the Soviet nuclear sabotage of America, but only to discredit them. I think this parallel makes the current status of the gold scandal worthy of comment. After 3 years of tireless effort by my friend Edward Durrell, the Fort Knox gold scandal now shows renewed signs of breaking into the open, in spite of all the lies and tricks the Rockefeller-controlled federal government can do. The international financial community is now more concerned about the massive evidence of fraud surrounding America's alleged monetary gold supply than ever before, because the sheer weight of evidence now makes it impossible for anyone except the Rockefeller-dominated major media to ignore it. The Carter administration has become so concerned about this that on July 28, 1977, just last month, Treasury Secretary Blumenthal took the extreme step of going to the Fort Knox bullion depository himself. Can you imagine? He had himself photographed by Time magazine, sitting on the same stack of warmed-over junk gold bars viewed at Fort Knox in compartment number 33 in September 1974. Then he went to Louisville to deliver a speech prepared before he left Washington, saying how impressed he was with the wonderful hoard of gold he had just inspected at Fort Knox. Former Treasury Secretary William Simon knew better than to go there personally, even at the height of the public controversy over Fort Knox 3 years ago. Instead, he sent poor Mrs. Mary Brooks, the unsuspecting head of the Bureau of the Mint, to tell the world, "It's all here." But now extreme measures are called for in the name of cover-up, because while the public sleeps, the powerful financial community shows signs of awakening with a roar. If you would like a very hard-hitting, fully documented summary of the mountain of evidence that now has the Treasury Department so worried, send a business-sized, self-addressed envelope bearing first-class United States postage for 2 ounces, 24 cents, at the time of this recording, to Mr. Edward Durrell, D-U-R-E-L-L, Post Office Box 586, Berryville, Virginia, Zip 22611. Only time will tell whether, in fact, the Fort Knox gold scandal will at last be revealed truthfully to the American people at large. But even if it breaks today, it's already more than 3 years overdue. The United States Congress chose to ignore my charges and my evidence when I testified about it in April 1974. And, my friends, we don't have 3 years to wait for the truth to come out about the Soviet nuclear mining of the United States. We are on borrowed time. That is why, after recording audio letter number 24 3 months ago, I suspended the audio letter to concentrate all my efforts on a campaign to prove conclusively the presence of Soviet nuclear weapons inside our country for all to see. I knew that it was a long shot because none of the citizen groups with whom I was in contact had access to sophisticated equipment of any kind or much money to spend on it or even much free time. But I believed it was still worth a try because, as I warned in audio letter number 24, only total exposure of the Soviet threat to our nation has any chance of turning aside nuclear war one. It is therefore painful to have to tell you, my friends, that my efforts and those with whom I have been working around the United States have so far been unsuccessful in achieving their primary goal, the physical recovery and public display in a safe manner of a Soviet nuclear bomb from a lake or river. There has been some partial success in spreading the alarm more widely than before, but the total exposure, which is so vital to our survival as a nation, still has not been accomplished. Since recording audio letter number 24 in May, I have responded to requests from concerned citizens throughout America asking for the locations of any Soviet nuclear weapons in their areas. In many cases, upon receiving this information, people have tried to get local or state authorities to investigate, usually without even a token of success, although in two or three cases there does seem to be some genuine interest at the local level. Other people have gone to their local newspapers, but these in general have not bothered even to contact me to find out more about the story. Finally, scattered attempts have been made by groups of citizens in a number of states to send scuba divers down to search the bottom of reservoirs in an attempt to actually find a bomb. These private citizens who, by their own choice, have donned diving equipment and spent their own time and their own money to at least try, deserve all of our thanks. I am not aware of a single case in which these private searches were able to be done with the aid of anything more than a hand-carried underwater light or, in rare cases, a commercial underwater metal detector. And some divers do not even have this much. And yet, they have tried to do that which the federal government, spending over $80 billion yearly on so-called defense, refuses to do. In one case, which has been confirmed, two bombs were found and retrieved, not from a reservoir or river, but from a saltwater cove in a resort area on the East Coast. But these two bombs, instead of being made public, were turned over to the federal government by the individuals involved for their own reasons. Otherwise, I cannot confirm that any other bombs have been found or retrieved up to now. 2 months ago, what may turn out to have been our one best opportunity to catch some Soviet agents red-handed occurred in Texas. An individual was driving along a country road after midnight when he noticed an old-style green and white delivery van with Florida license plates parked for the night on the roadside. It looked like a hippie van, yet was parked with legal precision, complete with regulation high-visibility warning markers set out along the edge of the road. Something just didn't look right about it. And on a hunch, my friend found a payphone and called to ask whether by chance any Soviet vans were scheduled to be on that road at that time. One of my intelligence contacts quickly checked the available information and reported back that two Soviet trucks should be parked for the night on that road, one of them in the exact location where my friend had seen the green and white van. Furthermore, the vans were still en route to their targets and still had nuclear weapons aboard. My friend then spent the next 4 hours trying in vain to bring about some decisive action concerning the van. He called a friend who was acquainted with my warnings about the bombs, getting him out of bed at 1:30 a.m., and together they tried in vain to get the appropriate law enforcement authorities in that area to go with them and investigate the van. Finally, they drove back out to the van at around 3:30 a.m., stopped behind it with their car lights illuminating the van, and took two photographs, one a close-up of the Florida license plate. The next day, they went to the local police headquarters and asked them for identification information about the van, giving them the Florida license number. The police used their teletype to check with Florida, and the state of Florida wired back that the license number given them was non-existent and the van unidentifiable. And so it has gone, my friends. Those who are ready and willing to take action on behalf of our beloved country are hampered by limited resources. And those who do have the necessary resources and authority to take decisive action refuse to do so for an endless variety of reasons. Many simply do not believe. Others cannot bring themselves to part with a portion of their own personal wealth, time, and effort, but cast about forever looking for someone else to do it. And virtually everyone in the position of authority to act, whether great or small, is not strengthened by that authority, but imprisoned by it, afraid to run any risk of a wrong decision that might hurt their career. Meanwhile, time has slipped by waiting for no man. And now the Soviet Union has completed their project of planting nuclear mines in the inland lakes and rivers of the United States. Furthermore, since they still have not been impeded in any way, they are now placing additional bombs at other kinds of targets, which were ranked lower in priority than our water resources. My basic task of warning you in advance about the plans of our hidden rulers for events to come was completed with audio letter number 24 3 months ago. Now, unfortunately, a new phase is beginning for the audio letter, because increasingly it will be my duty now to chronicle the step-by-step fulfillment of these terrible plans as they are carried out. Time and again, these plans have been delayed, tripped up, and brought to nothing by our merciful God, who wanted us to use our heads to see the truth around us for what it is and turn to Him. But, my friends, you know as well as I do that America as a nation has not done this. So now, by our own choice, we are going to suffer. And the suffering will get worse and worse until and unless we as a people open our eyes. I realize, my friends, that these are hard words. Many will hear them and reject them outright. But this I know. Events themselves are going to put man in his place in no uncertain terms. My three special topics for today are topic number one, the Panama Canal trapped for war. Topic number two, the Second Battle of Britain. And topic number three, man-made earthquakes to set the stage for nuclear war one. Topic number one. 4.5 years ago, in early 1973, I wrote my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar. I ended the book with the following words of warning about the Panama Canal. Quote, "The United States presence in the Panama Canal Zone area is a geostrategic necessity to ensure shipping through the canal. It will also become a geostrategic necessity for the new Asian aristocracy, just as Europe became for the new imperialism. If the new Asian forces are not understood, but are met with ignorance and arrogance, then the world will indeed be headed not for a, quote, generation of peace, unquote, of which President Nixon has so proudly boasted, but for World War III. End of quotation from my book. By June 1974, I had received hard evidence to the effect that the Republic of Guyana, Venezuela's neighbor, had become the new Cuba, with nuclear medium-range missiles targeted on the Panama Canal, as well as targets in the extreme southern United States. I reported this on radio talk shows all around the United States at that time, together with additional intelligence to the effect that the Panama Canal was being planned for use in triggering nuclear war on America 3 to 4 years later on, that is, mid-1977 to mid-1978. In October 1974, I recorded my first talking tape entitled How to Protect Yourself During the Coming Depression and Third World War. And in that tape, recorded nearly 3 years ago, I repeated my warnings about the plans of powerful men to deliberately involve America in nuclear war and the plans to use the Panama Canal to help trigger this war. 3 and 4 years ago, my warnings about nuclear war to come fell on deaf ears. So-called détente with the Soviet Union was in full bloom, after all. And besides, wasn't the United States the most powerful nation on earth? And as for the Panama Canal, most Americans then were not even thinking about the canal, much less excited about it. But now, it is 3 years later. In the short space of a year, what was called détente has been shredded and dumped in the trash basket. Frightening new estimates of fantastic military spending by the Soviet Union have been disclosed by the CIA after playing down such spending for 10 years. Well-known Rockefeller associates have formed a group called the Committee for the Present Danger to publicize the Soviet drive for military dominance. And the Panama Canal has become an issue that grows hotter by the day. The so-called surprise attack on Pearl Harbor nearly 36 years ago disarmed all political opposition to America's entry into the war in Europe. In one stroke, the Pearl Harbor attack created a wave of emotion to go to war. In the same way, the real rulers of America are now setting up the American people for another such wave of emotion, this time over the Panama Canal. The conspirators do not really want any new treaties with Panama, despite the lip service in favor of them by their hired hands, such as Carter and Kissinger. Their actual goal is the exact opposite. They want people like Senator Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms, not to mention Ronald Reagan, to fight the pair of new treaties and defeat them, thus giving Panama an excuse to go to Moscow for help. This is why conservative leaders and organizations are suddenly getting all the publicity they can handle on the Panama Canal issue, courtesy of none other than the Rockefeller-dominated major media. Since the defeat of the two new Panama Canal treaties will be blamed on the conservatives, they will also be blamed for the consequent events in the mindless march toward nuclear war. The self-styled conservative leaders in Congress, therefore, are falling into a dangerous trap and taking millions of good and patriotic people with them. They look the other way about such things as the Fort Knox gold scandal, and they run the other way rather than investigate the Soviet nuclear sabotage of our own country. But the emotional appeal and great publicity surrounding the Panama Canal issue have made it too juicy to resist, and they have swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. whether the canal is used as a final trigger for nuclear war one itself, or whether it plays only a supporting role in bringing on the war is still at the option of the conspirators. But either way, the conservatives lose. Even so, this is not to say that Jimmy Carter will win on this issue. 4 days after Carter's inauguration as president 7 months ago, in audio letter number 20, I alerted you that a Carter Watergate was already in the works. And now, my friends, it has already begun. In the 3 months since I record audio letter number 24, the controversy over the personal finances of Burt Lance, Carter's budget director and former banker, has turned into daily headline news. Because of the closeness of the ties between Carter and Lance, Carter's image has already begun to suffer. But this is only the beginning. Not only is Carter's moral leadership image being tarnished by his defense of questionable practices by Lance, but more and more questions are being raised in the major media about Carter's judgment. And once a leader's judgment ceases to be trusted, he is finished. Confusion in NATO over what to expect from the Carter administration is causing nervousness. And recently, this boiled over into a bitter German protests when a secret White House contingency plan came to light. The plan calls for one-third of West Germany to be conceded in the event of a Soviet invasion. Can you imagine? As of now, only one major factor has prevented a complete rift between the United States and European members of NATO. That single factor is the hope that Carter will proceed with production of a neutron bomb, a tactical weapon. Without this bomb, the increasingly outnumbered and outgunned NATO forces will face hopeless odds in any Warsaw Pact attack. But the American neutron bomb has one weakness that may prevent it from doing NATO any good. It would not be deployed for operational use until at least a year and a half from now, in 1979. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union already has operational neutron bombs. A neutron bomb is a special version of a hydrogen bomb, so designed that a shower of deadly neutron radiation covers an area much larger than the area affected by the explosive blast. In nuclear weapons terminology, it is a clean bomb, because it produces very little fallout or residual radioactivity in comparison to conventional nuclear weapons. If exploded above a city, for example, it can destroy all life over a wide area and yet do relatively little blast damage to buildings and structures in the area. 14 months ago, in audio letter number 13, I revealed that the Soviet Union already has such so-called clean hydrogen bombs. And 3 months ago, when I recorded audio letter number 24, I reported that 7 trucks bearing nuclear weapons and driven by Soviet agents had been stopped by Canadian authorities on May 18, just before they attempted to cross over the border from Canada into northern Idaho. As of the recording date, I had not yet received any further word about any action taken, but now I can tell you more. The 7 trucks were driven by a total of 14 Canadian and American communists, 2 per truck. They were apprehended by a special joint unit of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and Army Security and placed under arrest after the nature of their cargo was confirmed. They were all charged with acts of treason and incarcerated initially at Wainwright, Alberta, but they have since been transferred to one or more other unspecified locations. Each truck was loaded with 2 14-foot-long crates, 3 feet square. Each crate contained a small single warhead missile, and it was learned by Canadian intelligence that the trucks were all bound for Lake Superior. All 14 of these missiles were the same type as the 53 previously planted in the Great Lakes, and the warheads were all neutron bombs. Thus, the Soviet Union can still satisfy all of the considerations which originally led them to agree to the super-secret nuclear safe zone across the upper portion of the United States, which I revealed in audio letter number 12 for May 1976. Since neutron bombs kill people, but preserve most real estate, the great industrial and agricultural heartland of America will still be usable for Soviet benefit after nuclear war one. And the explosion of clean neutron bombs over our northern cities will not produce significant fallout to drift around the globe and land on Russia. After the 14 neutron bomb missiles were disarmed, they were divided up. Several were sent to Great Britain and several to the United States, while several remained in Canada. Within 2 weeks, the neutron bomb suddenly became big news in the United States, with Jimmy Carter in the spotlight as the man to decide whether such a thing would be produced or not. By early July, news reports said that the United States had already tested a neutron bomb at the underground test site in Nevada. But what was not mentioned is that this was a test of a Soviet warhead, like those now lurking in the Great Lakes, not an American device. Canadian officials are completely baffled at this point by the conduct of the United States government in keeping all these things under wraps. But the Canadians are abiding by their obligations under mutual defense treaties not to break the story publicly on a unilateral basis, because certain key officials apparently still do not believe that top American officials are deliberately betraying us all into nuclear disaster. And now, my friends, the nuclear mining of strategic points in Canada, too, has begun, beginning around Montreal, while continued secrecy allows the Soviet Union to build their war trap all around us.